DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Elizabeth Ficuccelli, who is a best-selling, award-winning author of 15 books for adults and young people. Her books include Seven from Heaven, Shower of Heavenly Roses, and Lords. She's been published in numerous Catholic magazines such as Columbia, America, St. Anthony Messenger, and Ligurian. She is a frequent guest on EWTN television programs and on Catholic radio. With Elizabeth Ficuccelli, we go inside the pages of Thérèse, Faustina, and Bernadette, three saints who challenged my faith, gave me hope, and taught me how to love. Published by Ave Maria Press. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me.
Chris, it's a great pleasure to be speaking to you and your listeners today. Thank you so much for having me and to talk about my three powerhouse saints, as I call them, my three spiritual journey partners, which are, as you say, Thérèse of Lisieux and Faustina of the Divine Mercy and my good friend from Lourdes, Bernadette.
Talk to us about what helped you to see the thread that connected all three.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had been thinking for a while, you know, I write books. This is actually my 15th book, and I speak, and I have a radio show here in Ohio. But for a while, I was really felt drawn to the idea of putting on a retreat, a women's retreat. And I began to look over my body of work over the last 12 years or so to see, well, what kind of subject matter could I do? And I began to see that, well, I speak and write on these three saints, Thérèse, Faustina, and Bernadette, who have played important role models in my life, in my spiritual walk as a Catholic convert. And I thought, oh, I'd like to do a retreat on that. And as I thought about these three saints, I thought, well, what links them together? And I truly believe it was an inspiration, but what came to me very clearly was the virtues of faith, hope, and love. And of course, saints are canonized because of their heroic virtue. And while these saints embody many virtues, as they all do, I really did see a dominant virtue in each of them, with Bernadette being faith, Faustina being hope, and Thérèse being love. And I came upon this idea of an umbrella theme. How can these women help us as Catholic women grow in these same virtues? These three marvelous women have had such an impact on my life as a wife, as a mother, and as a Catholic evangelist.
They're God's little ones, aren't they?
There's nothing.
The world could look at them as they lived, and they would not have said before. Well, some of them, in a particular case, Bernadette, but for all three, they wouldn't have said, there's nothing extraordinary about them.
Not at all. And that, you just really hit the nail on the head with that, Chris. These three women were very much these humble little ones, as you say, and that's exactly what gave me the courage to be able to tell my little story, too. We're all little ones, you know, and so they really helped me, and here they are, three celibate women, you know, cloistered religious, and some people say, well, how did they help you as a wife and a mother? But it was that virtue of living simple lives, obedient lives, faithful lives, and trying to, you know, overcome their own self-doubts and their own wills to just say yes to God in the tasks he had for each one of them. And it was just saying yes to God and accepting themselves for who they were that he worked extraordinary things through all of them. And that's the great promise we have as Catholic disciples, that all we have to do is join our faithful yes to God, and the possibilities are endless.
Let's talk about your good friend, St. Thérèse.
I love St. Thérèse. She was the first saint who came into my life, and I was not raised Catholic. I would not become Catholic till I was a young adult at the age of 23. But Thérèse entered my life in the form of a religious medal that I found on the sidewalk as I was walking to school one day. And I thought this medal was the Virgin Mary, because I had a lot of Catholic friends as I grew up in my neighborhood, and I just assumed that Catholics all had medals of Mary. I didn't know there were other people that could be on a medal. Mm-hmm. And the remarkable thing was that my mother allowed me to keep this medal, which was kind of unusual because my family was not very open and friendly towards the Catholic Church. And so this was sort of like a forbidden object, and yet she was saying, if you want to hang on to it, keep it, you can. And I did keep it, in my jewelry box, but it would be 15 years before I would discover that this woman that was on my medal was not the Virgin Mary, but she was actually Thérèse of Lisieux. And it was just in my first couple of years of Catholicism when I was reading everything I could get my hands on about our beautiful faith, and I was studying the saints, and I came upon the inscription that happened to be on the back of that medal, which was, "After my death, I'll let fall a shower of roses." So I had this immediate sense that, you know, finding that medal was not maybe an accident. Maybe there was a purpose in this, and it was a really strong feeling that this little French saint, this, you know, person who I had no idea about, was watching over me, like a little bit of a guardian, and gently leading me to the Catholic Church. And she would become, in every sense of the word, at the heart of a mission that I believe God gave me, which was to be this Catholic evangelist, because she would be the very first subject of my first magazine article that got published, and my first adult book, which is Showers Heavenly Roses, because of her tremendous intercessory power.
It really quite literally bloomed, didn't it? It started out as a little bud, that little medal that you found on the road, and then all of a sudden it just blossomed into this beautiful relationship.
I think that's how God works. I think, you know, there's that saying, if we open our eyes, these miracles happen all around us, and I wonder how many things he sends our way that we, oops, miss, you know, because we didn't start that conversation with that person or whatever it was. We didn't act on that impulse maybe we had internally, but he does work in little ways like that. It doesn't have to be thunderbolts and lightning, you know. I mean, not that that's outside the realm of God, obviously, but I think in general, he speaks very profoundly and very loudly in the little things of life. And so finding that medal for me was a big doorway, and I really began to see that she had something to do with my life. And you know, and I began to understand that these saints were such a rich treasure of the Catholic faith, not something I had growing up in a nominal Lutheran environment, but that these saints are these amazing living beings up in heaven that have accomplished sainthood because of their heroic virtue, because they overcame so many of the obstacles that we deal with on a day-to-day basis in our spiritual journeys. And they're not, as I always say in my presentations, they're not these dead people from history, but they are these living people that are there to help us. And the church lifts them up for us, for their powerful witness, because we are supposed to be saints as well. We're saints in the making here on earth. And so, you know, God never intended us to journey alone. And so you have these wonderful people that you can call on. And sometimes they come to you. You know, and that's the case of Thérèse. She came to me first. And because of that, she'll always have a very special place in my heart. And the virtue I ascribe to Thérèse is love. Thérèse, it was amazing in that I think she just embodied love from the very beginning. She was raised in a very loving home, a very loving family, where her father and her mother, but her mother would die when Thérèse was 8, but her parents were loving, and they're on the road to canonization themselves. All her siblings, who would all end up in religious life, they were all very loving and nurturing to her. So her concept of God was loving, too. Why wouldn't God be a loving father if she was just completely nurtured on love herself from her earthly family? And she had this marvelous concept of God as a loving, merciful father, which just absolutely flew in the face of a big trend in French Catholicism at the time, which was that Jansenism heresy, where the focus of many Catholics at the time was God is this very strict judge, and there was a great emphasis on sin, and that you'd go to hell if you didn't, you know, follow the right path, and they kind of overshadowed the fact that God is a very loving and merciful father, and he wants to welcome us back. He wants us not to be in our sins, but he gives us a chance to start over. So Thérèse has this beautiful concept of love, and she writes about it in her autobiography, Story of a Soul. She exemplifies it as a religious, as a sister. She loves everybody in her community, even the ones that are difficult to love, especially the ones that are difficult to love. And so for me, she really challenged me to love the people in my path. And sometimes the people in our own family can be the ones that are most difficult to love. But, you know, love is a decision, and it's a daily decision. and multiple times a day decision, but that's what we're called to do. And she just exemplified that and really was a holocaust to God's merciful love. She wrote this oblation to God's merciful love. I believe she died of love, you know, she was consumed by her love. That's how much she just rose in that virtue. She was just incredible. So she offers us this powerful virtue of love.
And the relationship you would have with yet another one of this great trio of love here, Saint Faustina. Please tell us about her.
I just get so excited talking about all these saints. But Saint Faustina came into my life in the mid-90s. I was reading her a diary, and I fell in love with her too. So I started to, you know, begin to think, oh, she's just a wonderful spiritual companion. She can help me on my journey. And she was really opening my eyes back then to the beautiful divine mercy of God and the chance to start again and how he wants to, reclaim these sinners who have turned away from God and who are lost in their sins and thinking that they're unforgivable, and which, of course, is the great ploy of the evil one. And it's not God's plan. And so I was reading her diary, and as I said, it was the mid-90s, so this is before Faustina was canonized. She was canonized in the year 2000. The Feast of Divine Mercy became universal after that. This is when it was still very much a private devotion, and I was doing all the things back then in the 90s, the chaplet, the novena, and preparing for confession to, you know, not only the forgiveness of sins, but all the temporal effects of sin and all of that, which was still very, very much a private devotion kind of thing. And I was, at the time, I was a mother of two of our four boys had been born. One was four, and the second one was a newborn baby. And I had a great amount of sleep deprivation because this little baby never slept at night. And I just, if you've ever gone through a string of sleepless weeks, of sleepless nights, you can become unglued, and that really happened to me. And I, one morning, I just did this terrible thing where I just completely lost all my control, verbally, physically, emotionally, with my four-year-old for whatever he did that morning, not getting ready fast enough for preschool or something like that. And I realized in that moment, you know, how terrible that was and what a violation that was. And so I really knew that I had to make this better with God. But you see, I was still a relatively new Catholic. I mean, I was probably Catholic at that point about 10 years or so, but confession was always my stumbling block as a Catholic. That was the thing that terrified me the most, and the one that I never seemed to understand. I never got the whole concept of, you know, the priest is there to represent Jesus Christ with his arms out, you know, reaching for us to hug us and forgive us. I was afraid the priest wouldn't like me if he knew my sin, so I used to go way out of my way to parishes on the other side of town, make my confession to some unknown priest who wouldn't know me, and I had all these mixed up concepts in my head. I thought priests talked about what went on in the confession with their priest buddies, and I just really never got it, and I never forgave myself for my sins, and I think that was my real big stumbling block. So it was a practice that I would go, you know, once or twice a year, I'd go to confession, but I wasn't benefiting from it. I wasn't getting this important sacrament. And I think God, and I like to say Faustina, used this particular moment of my life, this very difficult moment where I had done something that I was just felt, this is the worst thing I've ever done in my life, to show me what forgiveness is all about. And I had gone to my own pastor, my own priest, my own parish that day, kind of as an extra penance. And I went in there and I was just crying and crying. I was brokenhearted and I told him everything. And, you know, he does what priests do. They listen, they give you words of advice, and then they give you God's absolution and send you on your way. And I remember that day I was sitting in that little chair feeling like the weight of the world was on my shoulders, that I was the worst person in the world. Like I was like a Judas, you know, and I whatever he was saying to me just kept deflecting off of me in my state of unforgiveness. But God granted me this huge miracle when I was leaving the confessional, had my hand on that doorknob and was going back into the sanctuary. It felt at that moment that someone had placed a bucket of warm water over the threshold of the doorway. And at that moment, this water just splashed down over me. And just in a moment, I mean, in a fraction of a second, I felt like I was floating. Like I went from a moment before where the weight of the world was on my shoulders till I was a free, floating, joyful, giddy person. It was that instantaneous. And I remember right away what Faustina had been saying in her diary, how many times Jesus had come to her and said, I want to pour out my ocean of mercy upon my sinners. And that day, you know, God poured out his ocean of mercy in a way I could actually feel, because he knew I was brokenhearted. He knew I was really, really contrite about what I had done. And he was showing me, you know, Elizabeth, this is what my forgiveness feels like. This is what divine mercy is all about. And it was transforming to me. I mean, I suddenly understood that sacrament. And as a great fruit of that experience, was able to write about it, and I speak about it. And many people have been touched by that story because they also have that obstacle to confession. So God worked some really beautiful things out of that otherwise dark experience.
It's interesting that for each of these three women, and even as you have experienced in some ways in your own life, that there's just no getting around the cross. And in most of our lives, you know, what I'm speaking about more specifically is those moments of suffering that they're either opportunities to grow closer to him or to run from him. And it seems as though in that moment, here you followed Faustina's promptings and maybe her guidance, her heavenly guidance, to run into that ocean. It was really quite beautiful.
You know, I think you're right. I mean, that's how I reflected on it afterwards, that I think if I were going to go out and talk about the great joy of the sacrament of reconciliation, it's always best to experience that firsthand. And, you know, I couldn't have done that honestly as a person who always had a stumbling block with it. But this extraordinary grace, which was the one and only time I ever experienced that tangible sensation, but that huge grace did give me the appreciation of that sacrament. And you know, the whole thing about sharing my story was never an intent of mine. You know, I sort of got in all of this as an enthusiastic Catholic convert, feeling called like Therese to bring other souls to God, to by pointing out the beauty of our faith and to set them on fire for the faith. Bringing my own story into this was never my plan or my idea, but I think the first time I shared my story was on Marcus Grody's The Journey Home, and after that, then people began to ask me to tell my story, and I really had to sit down and begin to look back over my life and connect those dots where God has graced me so tremendously. And so when I go out and share these personal stories, it's really not a, gee, aren't I a wonderful disciple, but it's, isn't God extraordinary that he did these things? And it's so good that I feel I wasn't supposed to keep it to myself. So I really hope that in the book that that humility is coming across, because when the publisher had asked me, bring your story into it, I was like, ooh, okay, I'm not sure, but I really took it to prayer, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't coming across preachy, like, you should do this or you should do that, but simply sharing the great stuff that God has done for me in my brokenness. And as I started to think about the brokenness, the list got really long. Mm-hmm. But God is such a good God, and that's where he meets us, and that's where he does some of his most extraordinary work.
Let's talk about little Bernadette, shall we?
I love little Bernadette, and she is, like you say, really a little one, because here is this little French girl at the age of 14 who is graced with this tremendous, remarkable gift of receiving 18 visions of the Virgin Mary. Now, of course, when a person claims they've seen Mary, it's most often met with a lot of resistance and skepticism. And she lived in a turbulent time, and that's a good point to also bring up, that when Our Lady appears, it's always in a turbulent time in that culture, in that geographic region, and that's part of God's plan. And so, you know, Therese, Faustina, and Bernadette all live in a turbulent time in the world and in the church. But for Bernadette, you know, France had gone from being this amazing Catholic nation, you know, eldest daughter of the church, a nation that has spawned just great popes and saints and visionaries and remarkable people, but then began on this secular journey in the Age of Enlightenment, and it was following on the heels of the Revolution. So there's this great secularist push, and the church is being very, very persecuted in the time of Bernadette. So when this little 14-year-old, when word gets out, it's not even she talks about it, but the village is talking about that she is seeing the Virgin or claiming to see somebody in the grotto of Mazabiel, you know, immediately there's resistance, not only by the police, but the church itself. Her own pastor is resistant because he doesn't want trouble. This is exactly the kind of thing that's not welcome news in such a hostile secular environment. And yet here she is, this 14-year-old who is the poorest of the poor in her town, who is riddled with health issues from day one, and least likely, you know, not very educated, least likely, and yet this is who God chooses, the littlest and most frail, and he sends his mother, and the Virgin comes to tell Bernadette these very short but important messages, calling us all ultimately to prayer, to conversion, and to penance. And she is this wonderful receptacle of the messages. She is completely obedient in following the directions of the Virgin and coming to that grotto for the 15 times that that the Virgin asks. She is completely humble in that she doesn't attract attention and brag about what's going on. She doesn't talk about it unless she's, you know, point blank interrogated by the police or the church. She does her best to remain humble and obedient and live a life of penance and conversion herself, you know, realizing this message is for her first and foremost. She can't, again, preach something to the world without living it herself. So she is just the most extraordinary model of visionary. And I always remember Father Benedict Groeschel, who wrote the foreword to my book, Lourdes, Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, that he always held Bernadette as that exemplary model of visionary because of how beautifully she lived out her sanctity, you know, for the rest of her life.
Well, I think it's important that we share that special connection that you have with her as well.
And yeah, and I think that, as I say, with the virtues that I ascribe, Bernadette had so many virtues, but I really ascribe the virtue of faith. And I think she's that example to all of us to challenge us all in our own faith, because Bernadette held on with very deep conviction that everything she saw in that grotto and received verbally in that grotto was genuine, was real. And she would, you know, stick to her testimony of that, never change it, never alter it, never embellish it, but always a very simple but direct and consistent replay of what she received in that grotto. And despite being interrogated by the police, and again, she's 14 years old, she's a child, and here is the police threatening to throw her in jail if she continues to go to the grotto, if she continues to speak of this event, and yet she knows she's committed to the Lady, and she can't, you know, not do that. She stands up to the pastor, the priest, who's very gruff and not receptive in the beginning at all. She deals with everything from people treating her like she's some kind of a superstar idol, which that really repulses her, because she's just trying to live a life of poverty and simplicity and obedience to Our Lady. So that's nothing to do at all with celebrity status. So she's trying to live this quiet life. And so she just, in so many ways, shows us what it means to be faithful. And I look at that myself and I say, how many times, you know, am I tempted not to remain faithful when I'm in a culture that's not maybe friendly to my personal faith and morals and beliefs? You know, how many times do I cave to others and maybe am silent when I really should speak the truth? And so Bernadette is just this wonderful example, and I think because she was 14 at the time, she just really throws that challenge out to us, you know, adults and young people alike, that again, it comes back to our simple yes, Holy Mother, in her case, I will come here 15 times. I will deliver the message you're asking me to my pastor about wanting a chapel built in this place and for people to come in procession, you know. And yes, Blessed Mother, I will live a life of prayer and penance and conversion, you know, and I will overcome my self-will. I will overcome my flaws, and I will, you know, live a life to attain heaven at the end, which she does ultimately. So, boy, she is such a model of faith and really does give us that loving example for us all to follow.
Well, Elizabeth, the book, Thérèse, Faustina, and Bernadette, Three Saints Who Challenged My Faith, Gave Me Hope, and Taught Me How to Love, is absolutely wonderful. I love the appendix sections that have the beautiful prayers, but also the wonderful reflection questions where you can either do that personally or it can be done in a group.
Right, and that stemmed from the original retreat idea. As I was, you know, conceiving this idea of the three-day retreat, and I was picturing myself giving my own story on Friday night and then one by one revealing these saints in the order of faith, hope, and charity, and having activities that would be tied to their lives, whether it was the rosary, for instance, or the chaplet and adoration, those kinds of things. But then these reflection questions for journaling, and I thought I might as well put those in the book as well, because I know, and it's probably because I'm a writer, but I love to journal, and God can really reveal some great things to us. So there are these reflection questions that allow us to go deeper into the stories of each of these three women. So, yeah, the book is kind of an anomaly in that it's hard to categorize because it's a blend of personal narrative on one hand and yet a biographical introduction to these three saints. And ultimately, that's what I'm hoping that the readers will be drawn to learn more. And if they haven't read what these saints have written, because even Bernadette has one book of her own writings, which are really were from entries in a journal in a notebook when she was in the convent. But Thérèse has written, and obviously Faustina with her diary. So whenever we have actual writings of saints, I always love to direct people to that, because, wow, that's right from the saint themselves.
Beautiful. Elizabeth, I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
Well, you know, again, I believe that God has never intended us to walk this journey alone, and that's why he's given us these amazing spiritual companions. And mine happen to be Thérèse, Faustina, and Bernadette, but there are, you know, thousands of canonized saints in our church, and they are there just for the asking. They understand what we're going through. They're there to help us, to guide us, to strengthen us, and we just need to take advantage of them because they are a beautiful treasure of our Catholic faith.
Elizabeth Ficcatelli, thank you so much.
It was a great pleasure to be here, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future, Chris.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Thank you.
And God bless.
With Elizabeth Ficcatelli, we've gone inside the pages of Thérèse, Faustina, and Bernadette, three saints who challenged my faith, gave me hope, and taught me how to love. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to AveMariaPress.com, the website for its publisher, Ave Maria Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.